other math class I've had here?
Yes. I'm in 362 right now.
Okay. Yuck.
Yeah. And then I have to stop 420 if that comes. Kind of a math class.
Roughly.
Yeah. It's time series.
Are you doing a set?
Yeah.
I guess it's time to start. Any questions about anything from last time? Oops. That was the formula I had there from solving the heat equation. So I had a heat equation on a semi-infinite white hot wire starting from the origin and going to infinity. So it's half infinite in only one direction. And I kept the left end, the zero endpoint, refrigerated at 0 degrees. And I was able to use the Fourier sine transform to turn the differential equation into something I could solve and use elementary techniques on. So the trick with the Fourier sine transform is it turns differentiation in the space variable where I applied it to multiplication by the transform variable. And if so, if you have a second derivative, it multiplies it twice. And so it worked out beautifully, and I was able to solve the differential equation. And at the last step, I undid the Fourier sine transform by applying it again, because it's its own inverse. And then that spit out this formula for a solution. And I was gonna demonstrate a maple thing here to show you that this is a perfectly good and usable solution. It's true, except maple took too long to. I wanted to animate it, and so at my desktop in my office, maple took too long to do it. It took about 10 minutes to do the calculations, and then it spit out a beautiful animation. And the temperature does exactly what you think it would do. I would have to truncate this integral out to some big number, like 10 maybe. I'll tell you why 10 is big in a minute. And that worked great. The funny thing is, when time is equal to zero, then you get this picture that's the Gibbs phenomenon. My temperature, remember, was 1 degree between 1 and 2 and zero everywhere else. So that's a step function. When I stick in time equals zero here, the solution would tend to that, and it has the Gibbs phenomenon that it overshoots the jump from zero to one, then wiggles along nice and close, and then it overshoots the jump back down at two. And you see this, no matter how big I pick this number to go here, I pick 10, I tried it with 22, and that also took too long to compute. But you get Gibbs phenomenon, no wonder what. The interesting thing is that when t is 0, this e to the minus w squared is 1. But as soon as t is positive, this thing kicks in. And notice, this is a negative exponential. So even when t is very small, this dies away in w. That's the integration variable. So this dies away really fast, and that's why I could take a small number here, like 5 or 10, and get a very accurate approximation to the solution. The Gibbs phenomenon gets worse at time equals zero, But then that goes away real quick as soon as the time kicks in and this e to the minus w squared is there. I think one of the reasons my computer had trouble with this is that if this looks like it has a nasty singularity at w equal to zero, and it's a delicate thing because you have to use L'Hopital's rule to realize this doesn't blow up. In fact, this is nice and even has a power series at w equal to zero. So it's infinitely differentiable as w slides into zero. And if I were going to mess around and improve the numerical calculations, I would probably use power series near the origin to write this function and split this integral into pieces. The power series converges very rapidly, so I could truncate it and get a very good approximation. But see, what else do you notice? So this thing does not blow up at the origin. And notice that I've also got a sine wx, and even sine wx over w is nice at the origin. So not only is this not blowing up at the origin, but it's actually zero to more than zeroth order at the origin. I can figure out the order of vanishing there. So nothing bad happens at the origin. And when as time kicks in, this negative exponential means I can truncate this integral and deal with this thing as a finite integral. And that makes it very concrete. And it also makes the integral converge fast enough that I could differentiate under this thing two times in x and once in t and say, sure enough, this solves my problem. It's a solution to the partial differential equation. And at time equals zero, it has the correct initial conditions by the Fourier inversion formula.
So it's fun to play around with numerically. Were there any questions about anything from last time? Well, at the end, I promised you I was going to talk about the complex version of the Fourier integral. It's basically the same thing as the Fourier integral I've been showing you, but it's like in the series case. The notation is so clean and nice and so much easier to write. And there's no sine and cosine. It's all this one case fits all. And so it's become traditional, especially for mathematicians, to use this complex version of this business. So really, the work is all the same. So let me switch over here. So this is lecture 30. And so remember, we would write a Fourier series in the complex form as a sum of cn e to the I n x. And that sum went from minus infinity to infinity, where cn was 1 over 2 pi integral from minus pi to pi of f of t e to the minus I n t dt. And let's see, if I wanted to do that in terms of I guess I won't do that. So I could also do that for a length L from minus L to plus L instead of pi. And I'd get a formula like this. And then if I approximated that by a Riemann sum, and it took my f to be a little bump function of compact support, I would get the same kind of routine I got when I did Fourier series. And here's what it boils down to. So this would be repeat the Riemann integral trick. Let's assume f has a small support. F is supported on a small set. And then you do this Fourier series on minus L to L and let L go to infinity. And what you get when you do that is you get that f of x is an integral
from minus infinity to infinity of something. I'll put a capital F here. And now here's an annoying thing in the theory of Fourier transform. 2 pi belongs someplace. And Stein has chosen to put his 2 pi right here. 2 pi I xs ds.
Okay, this looks like if you think of this integral as a sum, this looks like a sum of coefficients, and these look like the e to the I pi n x. So the s's are like the n's here. And we're summing up over all frequencies. So it's very much similar to what I did with series the other day in sines and cosines,
where f of s, funny formula here, looks very similar to that formula, f of, I'll put a t here, e to the 2 pi I t s dt. Oops, there's a big missing minus sign right here.
Otherwise, the Fourier, this would mean, if I had a plus there, it would mean you do this thing twice and you'd get back to your original function. But it's a minus and then a plus.
That's the complex version of these things. And of course, the theorem would be, if f was nice and integrable and piecewise c1, then this would spit out f, where f is continuous. And at jumps, it would approach the midpoint of the jump. It would equal the midpoint of the jump. And there would be a Gibbs phenomenon that jumps as I truncate these integrals. So taking a finite sum like a Fourier series would be like truncating these integrals from minus something to plus something. Okay, that's the definition of these things. That first thing, let's see. This is what we're going to call the Fourier transform. So the notation is I'll have several notations. I'll say the Fourier this is the Fourier transform of f. No subscript c or s for cosine. The Fourier transform of f is going to be a function of s. And I'll call it f hat of s. So this should remind you of the Laplace transform. Okay, so that the Fourier transform of f is this new function you get by integrating minus infinity to infinity f of t e to the minus 2 pi I s t dt. So that's a function of s, and t integrates out. It's a dummy variable. I can make that variable be called anything. That's the Fourier transform. To a mathematician. And now some books, instead of the 2 pi being here, you'll see 1 over the square root of 2 pi in front of the integral. I actually like that definition for lots of things because certain formulas become easier and cleaner to write. Stein chose this one because the inversion formula is so simple. It's going to make the other formulas, like the Poincaré formula and the differentiation formulas, uglier. They're going to have 2 pi's in them. So you got to choose some place to put your 2 pi and which formulas are your favorite. For Stein, the inversion formula is his favorite, obviously. And the inverse Fourier transform I'll write like this. F inverse of G is G upside down hat of X.
I'm putting it next there because when you do the inverse, you're thinking of first I go into S space, and then I go from S space back to X space.
So I'm going to leave my X there. That would be the integral from minus infinity to infinity of g of s, and here's where it's a plus 2 pi I, x s ds. And so a big fact is that the Fourier inverse transform is the inverse to the Fourier transform. So you see we have Fourier inverse of Fourier is equal to the identity.
And of course, I'm going to stop putting identity in quotes here. It spits me back F, but if F has jumps, then it's going to, this thing is going to be at the midpoint of the jumps rather than, you know, whatever F itself does. If F is nice and smooth, then it spits back F. And I have to think of what conditions are going to make this thing true. That's actually a tricky thing, and a lot of math was developed to understand it. L2 with the Lebesgue integral is going to be the right space to do Fourier transform, eventually, for you. In this course, we're going to do it on various subsets of that, and in the end, I'm going to tell you that you can complete a Hilbert space and get L2 that way. I'm going to do it first on functions that decay rapidly at infinity. That's going to be the plan. So that's a big fact we'll do soon. And other properties which are important, especially to engineers and scientists who use these things, so let's see. How can you write this? One way to write this is that the inverse transform of the transform is F. That's a pretty dopey way of writing it. Other key properties is if you take the Fourier transform of the derivative, then you get 2 pi I times the Fourier transform of F, times S. Stein likes to use the Greek letter xi, but I have a terrible time writing xi, and saying xi is even worse, so I'm going to use S. If you want to see me get tongue-tied, put two xi's in one equation and I'll kill it. So notice, differentiation on this side turns into multiplication by s on this side. That's going to turn partial differential equations in the space variable into algebra. And that's exciting. And so if I do that twice,
let's see, a 2 pi would come out, and I'd get 4 pi squared. I squared, I times I is minus 1. So I'd get minus 4 pi squared s squared times the Fourier transform of s.
This is exactly like Laplace transform formulas, where Laplace transform of the derivative spits out multiplication by s. And notice, you know, the Fourier sine and cosine one had minus some stupid thing here involving values of f at the origin. We don't have that for this because there are no n's.
And let's see, those are the big properties for today. And I'm going to use them. I guess I'll illustrate what this is all about for a heat problem and why it's exciting. So heat, I've been talking about heat problems. Remember my hot wire problem that went from zero to infinity. If I had homogeneous left boundary condition, so if the left end is refrigerated, held at 0 degrees. That's the problem I solved last time. I used the Fourier sine transform. And that was a good thing. Let's see. That was a good thing because the Fourier sine transform, if I take the derivative in the space variables, that spit out a minus w squared times the Fourier sine transform in the space variables, plus an annoying thing, namely square root of 2 over pi times u at 0. And it's exactly because of this thing right here that I chose the Fourier sine transform. If the left end is held refrigerated, that thing is 0, and I can chuck it. Okay. If the left end was insulated, that would mean that the left end has zero temperature gradient. So that would be d by dx at u of 0 t. That's the temperature gradient. If the left end is insulated, the temperature gradient would be 0 because there's no heat flow. And remember, the Calvin's law is that the heat flow is proportional to the temperature gradient. So if there's no flow, the gradient would have to be 0. And the gradient is in the x variable. And so that at that insulated end, and because of that insulated end condition, the proper thing to use for that problem is the Fourier cosine transform. That's a fun exercise. I might actually give it to you at some point. It would be very simple for you because you'd look at what I did with the Fourier sine transform in my last lecture and repeat it, except it'll turn out a little bit different because you'll have cosines instead of sines. But the key for the Fourier cosine transform is that the Fourier cosine transform of the second derivative in the space variable, that would be minus w squared times the Fourier cosine transform of u, and then you'd have a minus 2 over the square root of 2 over pi du dx at 0 t. And the insulated end boundary condition makes this be 0. So you get this very simple thing. And this turns the partial differential equation into some algebra. And the space variable goes away. I mean, the derivatives in the space variable go away. They turn into multiplication by w. And that's a very elementary equation to solve then on the Fourier cosine transform side. And it's very similar to what I did last time. Well, what I want to show you about today using the Fourier integral is the no-end problem. So I'm going to have an infinite wire, hot wire. And let's see, I think I'll have an initial temperature to make life simple be a temperature of 1 degree from minus 1 to plus 1. So here's, I'm going to make it be 1 degree from minus 1 to plus 1. And so it's going to be ice cold 0 here, and then pop up to 1 degree, and then be ice cold after that.
And of course, I can make a Fourier integral that approximates that, except at the jumps, it'll go to the midpoint, and at the jumps, there'll be the Gibbs phenomenon, which is kind of
annoying, but something you have to live with. Okay, so I'm going to have the heat equation. And I'll take that C to be 1 just to make life easier. The heat equation is dTu dx squared equals du dt. There'd be a C there, depending on the material. And the idea is I'm going to hit this with the Fourier transform in the space variable. So we apply the Fourier transform in x variable, in the space variable. Okay, so let's write u hat of s t is going to be the Fourier transform of u x t e to the minus 2 pi I x s dx. So the x variable integrates out, and it spits out a new function in s. And t is just floating along like a parameter. Okay, so let's think about what that does to the partial. By the way, if I differentiate in the t variable here, I can put the derivative underneath. And if you think about how I would go about showing that, I'd have to show that I can differentiate under that integral somehow. But remember, this is a temperature problem, and I've got a little bit of heat between minus 1 and 1. You can bet that the heat far away is going to be a really tiny small amount, because the total amount of heat is conserved. And so there's just no way I can heat up the whole universe. So it means that this integral actually dies away very rapidly. So that's just a physical way of thinking about it. Eventually, we're going to have to think about it mathematically. But it's plausible that I would take du d hat dt, and that would be the integral from minus infinity to infinity of d by dt xt e to the minus 2 pi I xs dx, because heat dies away fast. Goes to zero. So I'm going to start saying words like this, rapidly at infinity. We're going to have to figure out what we mean by rapidly at infinity. Soon. Okay. So now let's see. I've got my PDE, and so I'm going to take the Fourier transform of uxx in the space variable. That's going to be equal to the Fourier transform of du dt, which I just hopefully convinced you is du hat dt. But this is the interesting, when I do this, if I take derivative of derivative, if I take the transform of derivatives in the x variable, this is going to spit out minus 4 pi squared. That 4 is because I comes out twice. One derivative gives me an I, the second derivative gives me another I, and that's a minus 1. Times s squared u hat of st. And there we see it. I now have this is an easy differential equation in t. A first order differential in t, differential equation in t, and it's very elementary. It's just exponential decay, basically. And s goes along like a parameter in this calculation now. So what I get du hat dt equals minus 4 pi squared s squared u hat. So that's a very famous differential equation you learn how to solve in the first couple weeks of an ODE course. You even learn how to do it in freshman calculus. That's exponential decay, like radioactive decay. And you know that u hat, therefore, is equal to a constant, I'm going to leave some space there, times e to the minus 4 pi squared s squared t. S is a parameter, so that acts like a constant in this thing. That's like minus k times there, that. So this would be e to the minus kt. But since S is floating around like a parameter, this constant might be different for different S's. So this constant can depend on S. By the way, another way to think about this . What else could I do? I could do this. Let's see. 1 over u hat bar du dt is equal to minus 4 pi squared s squared. And that's the d by dt of... I don't want to think about that. I mean, I could make a big deal out of doing this very carefully. But I like my argument that my constant might depend on the S. Okay, so now I've got u hat. I need to think about what that constant is, though, and that comes from the initial condition. So the next step is to use the initial condition. To pin down the C. Okay, so let's see. U hat of S at time 0 that would be equal to CS, because e to the 0 is 0, so that's going to be the CS function. But by definition, that's equal to the integral from minus infinity to infinity of the initial function, which I didn't name. I wish I had named it. Let me go back and name it. There it is. Let's call this blue function here f of x. That's my initial temperature distribution. And at time equals 0, that's what my function is. So this would be my u of, I'm integrating in the x variable at time equals 0, e to the minus 2 pi I sx dx. And this is my f of x. And so this boils down to integral. See, remember my f of x was just 1 between minus 1 and plus 1. So this is an integral between minus 1 and plus 1 of 1 times e to the minus 2 pi I sx dx. And that's easy to crank out. That integrates to, an antiderivative for that thing is minus 1 over 2 pi I s times e to the minus 2 pi I s x evaluated between x equal minus 1 to plus 1. And so let's see, what is that? There's a 1 over 2 pi, I'll just leave the 1 over 2 pi I here. when I stick in, I'll get a minus, and so that's going to be, I'll leave the s out in front, I'll get an e to the 2 pi I s times 1 minus e to the minus 2 pi I s. I should slide something on. I guess I'll leave the s. Why am I doing this? There's no fraction.
Well, there's the sine function staring at you.
This is e,
right? If I divide, if I pull the 2 over I in here, that is the sine of that of 2 pi s.
So I'll move the 2, I'll put a 2 over I here, and a 2 over I here. Then what's left is 1 over pi times the sine of 2 pi s over s. Nice and clean and simple. Okay, so I think I'm done now. I figured out what the C of S is. That's it. This is the function C of S. So what I have now is that my u hat of st is this function, 1 over pi sine 2 pi s over s times e to the minus 4 pi squared s squared times t.
Okay, all I did was go back and stick the C of S in the spot where it was supposed to be. And now the last step, which is fantastic, is that I can undo the Fourier transform and get my function that I actually want. So the idea that I do the Fourier transform and turn my equation into something simple and some algebra makes different derivatives go away, and then I undo it.
And when I undo it, undo the Fourier transform with the inverse Fourier transform. And then that's when I get u of xt is the integral from minus infinity to infinity. I got to write my function in here. Let's see, 1 over pi sine 2 pi s over s e to the minus 4 pi s squared t. And here's where I put the exponential e to the 2 pi I s x ds. Okay, that looks kind of horrific to stare at.
But, let's see, sine is odd and s is odd, so this thing is even. This thing is even in s because of the s squared.
So let's think about this. This is my answer, I'm done. But I'm looking at it a little bit more. This function is even, because it's odd over odd. This function is even. And this function is cosine 2 pi sx plus I times sine 2 pi sx. The cosine part is even. The sine part is odd.
Okay, so look at, I got even times odd part. That's going to integrate out to zero because this is a symmetric integral from minus b to plus b. And so all those integrals, and then I let b go to infinity. All those integrals are going to be zero because an even times an odd is odd. So that the imaginary part of this integral is going to integrate to zero. And I'm left with...
So this part right here... is that. And so what I claim in the end is that that odd stuff integrates out to zero, and I'm left with the even spot stuff. And I get this nice formula for my answer. Sine 2 pi over s e to the minus 4 pi squared s squared t cosine 2 pi sx ds.
And I could mess around with Maple and actually compute this thing and show you that it gives you nice, I could animate it. It's a very useful formula. It's a correct formula. And by the way, I found it kind of doing stuff that maybe you thought was fishy, like when I differentiated the integral sign. But when I write this formula and look at it, I can differentiate in the x variable, no sweat, and the t variable, no sweat. It's because of this e to the minus exponential. That thing makes this integral converge very rapidly. At t equals zero, it has the worst behavior, because then it's like Gibbs phenomenon. But when t kicks in, this term makes this this thing converge beautifully. And truncating the integral, that stuff on the end goes to zero so fast that you can truncate it and differentiate under the integral and no sweat. So I could verify that, aha, this formula actually spits out something that solves a differential equation. The tricky thing would be to see that it solves the initial condition. And that's when we have to understand the Fourier integral and that business about convergence of jumps and the Gibbs phenomenon. Actually, if I had given you a nice smooth function, I wouldn't have this problem right now. I wouldn't have to sweat about it so much. But the fact that there's jumps means I've got Gibbs phenomenon to worry about. And it only kicks in at time equals zero. As soon as time kicks in, this would smooth it out and there'd be no Gibbs phenomenon anymore. Phenomenon. And this function is nicely behaved at s equals zero because of the, in fact, it's infinitely differentiable there. So all the functions in here are very nice. So it's kind of cool. Time makes this thing die away really fast. And also the fact that as s gets big in this cosine is wiggling like hell. And it's like the Riemann-Lebesgue lemma, that wiggling like hell causes cancellation. And so there's two reasons why this integral dies away far out. One is because this exponential dies away, but the other reason is because this wiggling makes cancellation happen. The more the faster the wiggles, the more cancellation takes place, as in the Riemann-Lebesgue lemma. And that makes the tail end die away even faster.
So I would call that the answer. What time is it? So I guess I enjoyed spending a couple days being sloppy where I didn't have to talk about convergence of the tail end of the integrals and stuff like that. But that is something to worry about, especially if you're a mathematician. So I think I'm going to go start. I probably won't start today, but you should start reading chapter 5. Don't read all of it in one day. There's various... To make these integrals behave nicely, we're going to assume the functions we deal with decay at infinity. And you know, when you're talking about heat, that's a very reasonable thing to do. Because you're not going to heat up the whole universe with something, with some problem. Your heat is going to be localized, and as it dissipates, well, it's going to go out to infinity, but you can't heat up the whole universe, and so it's going to go to zero at infinity. That's what you should think about when you're thinking about Fourier transform. Your functions are going to be fizzling out far away. Otherwise, you'd be heating up the whole universe. So to start off, let's see, maybe you've studied from freshman calculus integral of things like 0 to infinity of 1 over 1 plus x squared dx. That's called an improper integral, and it stood for the limit as b goes to infinity, integral from 0 to b of 1 over 1 plus x squared dx. And that's the limit as b goes to infinity. That's a famous integral. The antiderivative of 1 over 1 plus x squared is the arctangent function. And you know what the arctangent function looks like? It looks like this, where this this upper limit here is pi over 2. And this bottom one is minus pi over 2. And it's 0 at 0. So that's the arctan function. So this is going to be in limit pi over 2 minus 0. And so what you think of, that's how you define that integral, but what you think of it is it means the area under one over the graph of 1 over 1 plus x squared. See, that would look like this. That's the graph of 1 over 1 plus x squared. And what this thing is telling us is that this area from here to here, as you go to the tail end over here, this I could truncate it and get as close to 2 pi, pi over 2 as I want. And if I go all the way, then that if I wanted to paint that with paint, I would need enough paint to cover pi over 2 square inches. Okay, so this area goes all the way if I'm going to get pi over 2. And the integral from minus infinity to infinity is going to stand for limit as a goes to minus infinity from a to some spot, might as well make it 0, plus the limit as b goes to infinity . And for these to make sense, both of these limits better exist. And then you add them up. And you, in freshman calculus, realize there's some conditions that make everything safe. Going to 0 at infinity rapidly enough makes it safe to do these integrals. And so the safe thing we want is we want to do a balanced thing. So we'd let n go to infinity and go from minus n to n. And so I'm going to talk about next time when everything's nice. Meaning it dies away at infinity. If things are dying away at infinity fast enough, then it doesn't matter how you let a and b go to infinity. You can let them go to infinity in a balanced way like this and be perfectly good. And that's what we like to do in Fourier transform business. It makes life easier. It's like when we sum a Fourier series from minus n to plus n. And we're going to do it that way. We're going to be in the nice safe category all the time when we work on these things. And we can do stuff like that. Anyway, I'll talk about this stuff in the beginning of Chapter 5 next time and start doing the business now that I've introduced the things and shown you what they're good for.